But I believe we're joined now by Bernard de Gagné. Are you there, sir?
Hello, I'm there, Phil. Hello, how are you?
Very good, and I'm very glad to be talking to you because you are following a very important case. And,
yes.
And I am frustrated, I know many Canadians are and others, that we have this thing called the International Criminal Court. And everybody brags about it, or at least the U.S. State Department and the British brag. But we don't really, we can't understand what's going on at this court. And it, at the moment, the President Gbagbo, I call him president because it's never been demonstrated to me that he isn't, is facing charges. And I just wonder, could you, to begin with, could you tell us who Laurent Gbagbo is? Give us a little idea of who this man?
Yes, I'm pleased to. Thank you very much for inviting me on your show, Phil. Mm-hmm. Indeed, it's a matter that needs some clarification because I don't think that the press has been informing us quite accurately. In fact, Laurent Gbagbo is called in Côte d'Ivoire, even by his opponent, he's called the father of the multi-party system in Côte d'Ivoire. We should, I guess some people know Côte d'Ivoire by the name Ivory Coast. Mm-hmm. And Ivory Coast has been independent since 1960, gained its independence from France. And from 1960 to 1993, the same man was president all the way. His name was Félix Houphouët-Boigny. And so for 33 years, the man stayed in power as president, and it didn't seem to cause any problem to France, nor the United States, nor anyone, that there was only one party, and there were no real elections in Côte d'Ivoire. And so in 1990, there were economic problems in Côte d'Ivoire, and so Félix Houphouët-Boigny went and got a man by the name of Alassane Ouattara, who is now president of, I guess we should call it Ivory Coast for everyone to understand. Uh-huh. He's now president of Ivory Coast. And in those days, in 1990, he was appointed prime minister by Félix Houphouët-Boigny because the man actually, Alassane Ouattara, is from the IMF. He used to be an assistant to director for Africa of the IMF. And so he was appointed in order to sort of try to save the nation's finance, which was the Ivory Coast was having troubles because of the lower cost of cocoa and some other resources. And so he appointed that man because he knew that the man could not become president. Houphouët-Boigny had a heir, and a heir apparent by the name of Henri Conan Bédier, and he wanted that man to be the next president. So he appointed, as a prime minister, he appointed a man whom he knew could not become president, and that man was Alassane Ouattara. Why could he not become president? The reason is an article of the Ivorian Constitution, which says that you cannot be president of Ivory Coast if you have dual citizenship. Mm-hmm. And so it's an article that is sort of that exists in other parts of the world and other countries, and it does exist in Ivory Coast. Uh-huh. So there comes in Laurent Gbagbo. He had been in exile in France for several years because he was an opponent to Félix Houphouët-Boigny. So during the 80s, he was in exile in France, and he came back, and he decided to challenge the system, the one-party system, and he was quite successful at doing so. And in fact, he was in the election in 1992, I believe, or before that. He was a candidate in the election, and he lost, of course, to Félix Houphouët-Boigny. Mm-hmm. And then later, in 1992, actually he was probably a candidate in 1990, but in 1992, he took part in a protest. And that was the first clash between Ouattara and Gbagbo. Mm-hmm. And the protest was a peaceful protest, but Ouattara wanted to assassinate Gbagbo. And so they disguised it. They hired bandits and hooligans to set fire to cars in order to blame it to on Gbagbo's party. And they tried to assassinate him. They Ouattara jailed Gbagbo and had a mock trial where, in fact, there were no proofs whatsoever of Gbagbo's guilt.
They had a show trial. I mean, they actually had him in their custody.
Yes, they had him in custody for quite a long time, and he was jailed a bit like Nelson Mandela. In fact, you can a bit compare, except that Gbagbo has always been very peaceful. Some can say that Mandela was for a few years at least engaged in an armed struggle against the regime in South Africa, but Gbagbo never was in that kind of struggle. He was more like Gandhi in that.
And he's a scholar, isn't he? Quite a respected scholar.
Exactly, he is a historian, and he always was a very bright politician, very sincere politician, and an advocate of peaceful and democratic ways. And so in 1992, after he was jailed and he had this mock trial against him, Houphouët-Boigny died in 1993. And then Henri Conan-Bézier was elected, was chosen actually, was because he was the president of the National Assembly. So the Constitution had this provision that said that if the president dies, then the president of the National Assembly is automatically the president until the next election. And so Henri Conan-Bédier remained the president until 1999, where there was a coup by a general, General Gay. And a lot of people suspect that coup of having been organized by Alassane Ouattara. And then in 2000... a new constitution was adopted, and elections were held shortly after. That constitution still had Article 35, which says that no one can be president if you have a person who has dual citizenship cannot be president. So in 2000, Alassane Ouattara wanted to be president, but was denied that opportunity by the Supreme Court. It's actually called the Constitutional Council of Ivory Coast, because he had dual citizenship, and it was proven that he did have dual citizenship. So he could not run for president in 2000, and that's when Gbagbo was elected. Gbagbo won that election. And after the election in 2002, then a civil war broke out. And that civil war came from, actually, the country was attacked from the north, from Burkina Faso. I think, Phil, you know pretty well about the Rwandan.
Yes, there are links.
Yeah, it's a similar scenario.
The president of Burkina Faso, who was thrown out by the people about a year ago, he lives now in Ivory Coast.
Exactly, exactly.
as a guest, I guess, of the president Ouattara.
Yes. He's protected.
Pardon my laughter.
Yes, he's protected by the people that he helped put in power violently. So in Ivory Coast. So in 2002, this coup attempt fails, and it becomes a civil war, or so-called civil war, where the north of the country is being occupied by the rebel forces. Which were called, after a little while, they were united and called Force Nouvelle. In English, it means new forces. And the man, the secretary general of Force Nouvelle, is called Guillaume Soro. And that man would later become take part very actively in Ivory Coast political life, because he was appointed prime minister by Laurent Gbagbo himself, who always had this intention to bring peace through reconciliation instead of through war. Mm-hmm. And so in 2002, this civil war starts, bloody civil war, largely documented by United Nations experts, where the natural resources of Ivory Coast were plundered, where gangs of very violent people would terrorize the population, especially in the west of Ivory Coast. And so there were some meetings and some agreements organized. Some of them were organized by the French, the old colonizer.
Yes, they get this privileged role, and that's what later on I want to ask you about that. That the French somehow it's assumed that because they were the colonizers, they get to be involved in these matters, which you would think would be they would disqualify them rather than qualify them.
Exactly. Oh, the French were absolutely awful in Ivory Coast. As they always behaved, and actually they're the ones who overthrew Laurent Gbagbo in April 2011. The French army did the job because the rebels were basically, they received some training in Burkina Faso, but against the Ivory Coast National Army, in spite of the embargo on arms and the economic embargoes, the National Army of Ivory Coast was still quite a bit stronger than the rebels. And so in the end, the French army had to do the job instead of the rebels. So they bombed the presidential palace in which there were civilians, including President Gbagbo. They caused quite a bit of slaughters in the streets, and they helped the rebels gain power and give the power to Alassane Ouattara, who is France's man. They're their puppet. They want Alassane Ouattara to be in power because they know they can get better contracts with that.
And there was another party, and I want your comment about this. I was shocked, frankly, at how far they went. Ban Ki-moon made himself a player in this thing. There were United Nations helicopters armed that fired into the presidential palace. Is that right?
Hey, that's right. France wasn't the only party in the war. There were also so-called peacekeepers who were actually mercenaries bombing and killing civilians under the guise of protecting them. So it was really completely opposite of what we were told here by the press, the media in Canada. And really, the United Nations were there because there were several peace agreements, as I said. And in 2007, in the last peace agreement, the Ouagadougou, which is the capital of Burkina Faso, the Ouagadougou agreement said that the rebels were supposed to disarm. But they never did. And in spite of that, President Gbagbo held his part of the deal. He appointed the Secretary General in 2007, the Secretary General of the rebels, mm-hmm. Guillaume Soro, he appointed him Prime Minister because he wanted the peace. He thought that if he showed enough generosity and enough peacefulness, that those people would eventually stop fighting and understand that their future and their interest is in peace and prosperity instead of war. Mm-hmm. And he had also, President Gbagbo had in 2005 allowed Alassane Ouattara to be a candidate, because I said a few minutes ago that he could not be a candidate because of the Ivory Coast Constitution. But there's another article in the Constitution, Article 48, that says that in a case where the territorial integrity of the nation and other very severe and grave matters are at stake, that the president can take exceptional measures, and he has to present them to the National Assembly. Well, in 2005, President Gbagbo decided that as an exceptional measure, he would allow Alassane Ouattara to be candidate to run for president. And he did all sorts of measures like that, like the press was, there was a total freedom of press. The opposition parties.
We should underline that because there's no freedom of the press now.
Exactly.
Now, they didn't return the compliment.
No, certainly not. And what has been presented to us as a fight for democracy in Ivory Coast was actually a fight for dictatorship. Mm-hmm. So that's really what happened. And in 2011, 2010, when the election finally took place, in spite of the rebels not disarming, in the second round of the election, actually President Gbagbo was reelected. That was the decision of the Supreme Court of Ivory Coast. And this man you were telling us about a few minutes ago, about Ban Ki-moon, in fact, he had a delegate in there whose name was Young Jin Choi. And he became the official liar of the United Nations. Mm-hmm. He did two things, two major lies. First of all, he was supposed to just attest that the elections were held in good shape and that the rules of democracy had been followed. That was his mandate. Mm-hmm. But instead of doing that, he took on himself to say who was the winner of the election. He did that before the Supreme Court rendered its judgment. Yeah. And that was the first lie. It was not true. In the end, Gbagbo won the election because in the north part of the country, and that's the second lie, there were massive frauds, violence by the rebel forces.
Yeah, once you have them, if you have rebel irregulars around with guns, you can't have a proper election anyway. It's impossible.
Exactly. And Gbagbo's party, which is called the Front Populaire Ivoirien, presented to the Supreme Court a request about they want eight departments, the election to be canceled in eight departments. The results, according to them, were not sincere because they were not valid results, because there had been too much violence, too much intimidation, and there were massive frauds, which everybody could see because the results, the table showing the results, had, for example, more votes for Ouattara than there were registered electors in one department. Mm-hmm. So it didn't make sense. And so it was obvious. And so the Front Populaire Ivoirien appealed to the Supreme Court. They said, no, we want that canceled. And the Supreme Court did concede that, yes, we're going to cancel it in seven out of the eight departments for which you're calling for cancellation.
Mm-hmm.
And as opposed to that, Ouattara's party did not even present any protest, they did not use their right to appeal to the Supreme Court at all. That means basically that they were satisfied with the results in the southern part of the country, and they didn't want to, you know, attract mm-hmm. too much attention to what they had been doing in the north part, of course. And so it's obvious that the international community can say whatever it pleases, but according to the rules that were established prior to the 2010 election. And it's the same thing in Canada. It's the same thing anywhere in the world.
Sure.
It's the national institutions who decide who's elected, not the
United
international
States,
community.
The United States Supreme Court gave the election to Bush, and the UN didn't go and blow up the White House.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's a good idea, the UN do that, but, you know.
And regarding the reaction of some Ivorians to that, you know, let me suggest to you and to our listeners what would have happened in 1970 in the height of the FLQ crisis if Robert Bourassa had appointed one of the members of the FLQ as his justice minister, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it wouldn't make sense in Canada. And in Ivory Coast, it for a lot of people, it didn't make sense to have Guillaume Soro appointed prime minister, too. They thought this is awful because this man is responsible for the death of hundreds and thousands of Ivorians. Mm-hmm. But Laurent Gbagbo did it because out of a will to appease everybody,
power
and
sharing.
Also because he was under pressure by some countries, namely France, the United States, and also some other minor countries.
And they rewarded him with a coup.
Exactly.
let me ask you now a tie-up question here. The African Union has just met, and they said they're very tired of the International Criminal Court butting into their affairs and trying to rob them of their sovereignty. And yeah. One of them, the Prime Minister, I think, of Guinea, said that happened to Laurent Gbagbo.
Exactly.
I assume you agree with the African Union that it's time to call a halt to this stuff.
Totally agree, because the International Criminal Court is a big waste of money. It's not really a fair court. It is a court that is there to take people like Laurent Gbagbo, who were faithful to their people, but who are considered to be disobedient heads of state, and show them who's boss. Mm-hmm. And show them that they cannot disobey. That's the real purpose of the International Criminal Court. It has nothing to do with real justice. And there were thousands of people killed in Côte d'Ivoire by the French army, by Alassane Ouattara's rebels. And those people, Alassane Ouattara and Sarkozy, are not being tried at the International Criminal Court. Mm-hmm. And they should be, because they're the ones who killed people there. And so just to show you that they completely inverted the reality, and we're being fed lies, basically. It's not true, and we're wasting a lot of money. Canadian taxpayers' money is being wasted.
It's what they call victor's justice.
Exactly. It has nothing to do with real justice. And right now the trial has started, and it's obvious that it's not a fair trial. For example, they won't allow the judges in a majority decision, the judge from Trinidad and Tobago having given a dissenting opinion. They decided they would not allow leading questions in cross-examination. So that means that the defense, for example, if they consider that one witness from being brought forward by the prosecutor needs to be seriously cross-examined, they cannot ask leading questions, and which is a principle which is widely adopted all over the world, including in Canada. But in the International Criminal Court, you cannot do that. And so it's very unfair.
And it has a secret side to it. They have what they call protected witnesses, where it's our court, we're not allowed to know who it is who's testifying.
Exactly. The witness right now, witness P547, is actually a campaign organizer from Ouattara's party. And the court maintains that, in fact, the prosecutor maintains that, in fact, Laurent Gbagbo organized an ethnic war, and that he was against Muslims, and that that's the reason why he killed so many people. But, in fact, the first witness that we are hearing right now, it's a prosecutor's witness, is in fact an organizer, a campaign organizer from the RDR. The RDR is Ouattara's party.
Where's the transparency so that we can comprehend and evaluate the evidence? Because ultimately, we're supposed to see that justice is done.
Exactly.
We're not allowed to see. So how can we see? I don't get it.
Exactly. And there are a lot of people also were brainwashed in Ivory Coast itself by international media, especially French media. They were brainwashed, and they were led to believe fantasies, really. Mm-hmm. And so you will find some Ivorians who will say that this is not true. This is all made up by Gbagbo's partisans and all that. But it's not, I mean... The problem is those people have been listening too much to French radio and French TV.
Yeah.
And they were being fed lies, too. And
less reliable than the free press that used to exist in Ivory Coast.
Exactly.
Bernard,
exactly.
I'm very, very grateful that you take this time. This is a trial that's going to be ongoing, so we'd like to call you again and be brought up to date with this, because it is a story that's being, frankly, ignored in our media. So we're very, very grateful that you're able to take the time to talk to us.
It will be a pleasure again for me, Phil. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That's Bernard de Gagne. And by the way, I should have said in my introduction, he has written about this matter. He has traveled to Côte d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast, and knows whereof he speaks. And certainly this point of view needs to be heard because if you were to just point out, the simplest point is that Côte d'Ivoire is a country that is divided politically, has many factors and interests, and only one of them is being heard. And it happens to be coming from Mr. Ouattara, who is – his big credentials is he's the darling of the International Monetary Fund. This is the Taylor Report. You can write to us, taylor@cit.fm. We're going to take a break, come back to talk to Fred Jerome.